Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujeet Mallow, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome to another edition of the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 65, being recorded on the 18th of February, 2015, with special guest Nick Burling. I'm Sujeet Mallow, and on Skype with me, I have Evan Basilek and our special guest, Nick. Now, before I ask Nick to give us a little bit of introduction about himself, I just want to take this opportunity to bring our listeners up to speed on some recent Azure updates that just came out. Some of you may have received emails about this, but I might as well just go through them real quick so that our listeners are aware of this. One of them that came out was regarding Azure ML. You might recall we discussed it in a prior episode. This is the machine learning service from Azure, and that was previously in preview, and it is now GA. So, Evan, what does it mean when a service like this loses the preview tag and goes GA? From a support perspective, does that mean you guys are all ready to go and fully support it, or are there other things that come into play with taking out that preview tag?
We should be ready. I would say in reality there are different degrees of ready, right? So we, even today, what we call a GA service may or may not be where we want it to be fully in terms of, you know, all the capabilities and the support capabilities and certainly the experience with it.
Okay.
Right. I mean, it may have all the support, all the logging and instrumentation in the world, but if I've, you know, if we just don't have much experience with it, it can be challenging.
Okay.
But yeah, theoretically, yeah, and at that point we're fully committed to making it work.
Correct.
Once it goes out, maybe that's the way to say it.
Yeah, I mean they could open up a support ticket if something doesn't work and things like that. The other service that received a ton of updates was the HD Insight service. As our listeners might know, this is the service that is our kind of big data processing in the cloud service. And it's based on the Hadoop distribution by Hortonworks. And that was recently updated to the version 2.6, which is one of the newer versions. So that's now available on the service. Also, the HD Insight can now use some of the A2 to A9 and the D-Series nodes. In other words, those really fast nodes and the nodes that have the kind of SSD drives. So those are also available to HD Insight now. And then most interesting of all, HD Insight is now available on Linux. It used to be the Windows distribution that was previously available, but for some customers that prefer the Linux distribution, that is also available now. And then the Storm on HD Insight, which is their kind of event processing. So you can do, you know, you could do like a massive, a very high-speed Twitter-like captures and processing in real time. That system is now also GA. And HD Insight also has a cluster scaling facility, which means you can now change the number of nodes running HD Insight dynamically without having to kind of stop the service or, you know, recreate it and so on and so forth. And then a final tidbit also related to HD Insight was that DocumentDB is now available as a sort of like an HD Insight or Hadoop connector. So, you know, using some of your MapReduce scripts, you could reference this DocumentDB table and, you know, do cross queries against that as you're processing your MapReduce jobs. So those were some of the recent updates I wanted to get our listeners up to date on. Okay. So now, Nick, back to you. Can you please give our listeners a little bit of introduction about you and the company that you work for?
Absolutely. And thank you guys very much for having me. My name is Nick Burling. I'm the Vice President of Product Management for a company called Bluestripe Software. We're based out of the Research Triangle Park area here in North Carolina. And really, we're all about providing IT operations teams with visibility to how the infrastructure that they host impacts the performance of the business applications and services that run on that infrastructure. So we work with really the full gamut of businesses, from large scale Fortune 50 enterprises. In fact, Microsoft itself is one of our largest customers, all the way down to small and medium business. And really the common theme for all of our customers is having visibility to, again, the different systems, whether it's physical, virtual, on-premise, hybrid cloud, public cloud, having visibility across all those environments to the reality of what's going on within these different application environments. And when I use the word application, I mean distributed application or multi-tier, not just an instance of SQL Server running on a VM, but the interconnected systems that are the reality of what make up these different business application environments.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. And I know the reason that we got in touch with each other was we had Mark and I forget who the other gentleman was from the Netherlands. We had them on a previous show to talk about Azure PAC. And I believe one of your colleagues reached out to us because you guys do a lot of work with Azure PAC. And had a lot of background in that area. So, you did mention that you work with a lot of enterprise customers. What is your take on, how do you think the cloud being adopted in the enterprise today? What's the reality of cloud adoption in the enterprise?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's been, to be honest, it's been a really interesting and exciting last kind of 12 to 18 months. As you mentioned, we work with a variety of enterprises. And, as you would expect, some of the larger, more highly regulated businesses, financial institutions, healthcare institutions, they've typically been the ones that we've seen more reticent to look at moving critical business applications out into the public cloud. But we've really seen kind of a sea change over the last 12 months. We've gone to the point now where a lot of our large customers have fully funded extensive cloud projects. A lot of them are looking at hybrid cloud. We have a lot of cases where these businesses are interested in taking advantage of, all of the benefits that we now understand around public cloud, dynamic scaling, easier predictability around costs, more agile deployment of new capabilities. But at the same time, these businesses are still very much concerned about privacy regulation around maintaining critical business differentiating data on-premise within their environment. But, in those large enterprise accounts, we really have seen just a massive groundswell of projects. And, where we get involved is all around the management topic. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the big concerns that actually we've seen really across the board is once I start moving these workloads out into the cloud, am I still going to have visibility from a management and a monitoring perspective, right? Mm-hmm. And so whether it's, full bore, I'm going to go deploy a new app now in the public cloud, whether it's I'm looking at moving a presentation tier out into the cloud and maintaining some of our back-end business logic on-premise or in our data center, that management discussion is one of the big drivers of how we get involved with these projects. But the really cool and interesting thing that we've really seen across the board from large enterprise down to smaller and medium-sized businesses is the cloud is in every discussion that we get involved with. And one of the really interesting things is we're seeing more and more of the new opportunities. So when we're first getting involved, whether we're being brought in by the Microsoft team focused around our integration within the System Center portfolio, or whether it's a business coming to us directly with a set of needs around monitoring and management, many times now, whereas this really wasn't the case, 18, 24 months ago, many times now that first project where they're looking at bringing in monitoring and management is focused around a cloud-based project, and it's really exciting to see.
So are you seeing, Nick, when you talk about the management and monitoring of these systems, and I've certainly heard, customers that worry about that stuff, but they worry about that stuff on premises as well, right? This is just an extension of that. How much teeth gnashing and worry are you hearing about people not being able to really put their hands on everything, right? They lose that ability to hit the power button if they need to. Is that part of it as well, or really does that not come up?
It's much less about, you know, put their hands on the power button, and it's more around is my visibility to the end-to-end flow that makes up an application or a set of transactions going to be broken if I start to move certain aspects of these workloads out into the cloud? So let me give you a good example. One of our customers, I won't use their name for privacy reasons, but one of our customers is a very large tax processing company. And they, as a highly seasonal business, as you can imagine, they were very interested in the cloud and a lot of the abilities to take advantage of being able to scale up to address demand, but then very easily scale back, you know, reduce CapEx, et cetera. But one of the big challenges that they had was how are they going to have end-to-end visibility as these different end-user transactions hit these new presentation tiers that are running out in Azure, and they were looking both as, you know, both Azure PaaS and Azure IaaS, but are they going to have visibility from those front-end user-facing transactions as that then flows back into their on-premise systems? And to make matters even worse, they have back-end dependencies on third-party solutions, a certain large entity called the IRS as well. And so it's less about, and again, remembering that we're really involved with monitoring and management and do we have visibility to how our apps are performing and when issues occur, are we going to be able to quickly pinpoint where in any of these different hops that make up that end-to-end application is the problem occurring? That's been the big big cause for gnashing of teeth, right, is do we have a single view to the reality of these systems? And, wow, it's going to get that much more complex when we start moving entire tiers out into the cloud. And then on top of that, when you start adding sort of the dynamic nature of bringing up new instances of applications, is my monitoring solution going to be able to quickly identify those and then follow that performance across all of these different hops in the infrastructure? That's really where we've seen the biggest concern, and that's where Bluestripe really helps out the most.
So maybe I'm just struggling to get my mind wrapped around that, although I do have to say as the support guy, right, so Sujeet's in consulting and I'm in support. Nobody ever monitors their apps in my world, right? They only call because something broke, and they don't know where. They just know it's broken. But, you know, what is it about the, you know, when you're monitoring these things and they're trying to look at the synthetic, you know, workload or even real workloads, right, what is it about extending these to the cloud that makes it fundamentally different? I mean, is it just because you don't own the infrastructure? I mean, I would think the tiers are still, I mean, it's still Windows, it's still Linux, it's still SQL, you know, and whether it's in an Azure data center or, you know, your own data center, it's still, you know, it still kind of would appear the same, I would think. What am I missing? I mean, what's different about that?
No, I think you raised a great point. So the first key thing is, you know, the vast majority of our use cases and where people are using us are real production workloads, right? So these aren't synthetic transactions. These are real user transactions. This is, you know, when one of these apps goes down, this is a revenue impacting situation. But you make a very good point, which is that same level of complexity, by and large, particularly in the large enterprise environments, exists on-premise as well as in a hybrid cloud or even a full public cloud scenario. So it's less about introducing new risk by virtue of moving to the cloud and more about traditional monitoring and management solutions have a very difficult time bridging between these worlds. So here's what I mean by that. Take some of the other monitoring and management solutions out there that may be based off of having access to network infrastructure to do things like implement taps or put in port mirrors, you know, promiscuous NICs, these kinds of things. Well, now, if you don't actually have access to that network infrastructure out in the cloud, what's your monitoring solution going to give you? Another thing is looking at PaaS, right? Looking at dynamic instantiation of these different applications and workloads as, you know, all of your different, you know, demands increase as you have new user transactions, new load, and you're bringing up these instances. This has also been a major challenge for a lot of other monitoring solutions. So it's less about does the cloud bring in necessarily new complexity, and more about, as you look at the world of monitoring and management, is it able to adapt to this new environment and start to bridge across these different environments, right? So, you know, I've now got transactions that are starting out in the cloud that are coming on premise. I've got new levels of infrastructure that's routing transactions, you know, new DNS infrastructure, Active Directory out in the cloud. And again, does your monitoring and management solution give you visibility to all of those interactions? Because the vast majority of these solutions have grown up inside of the data center.
Okay, no, that makes sense. That kind of fills it in, because I really get when you talk about the packet capture stuff and you talk about the dynamic and, you know, the dynamic growth and shrinking of roles. I gotta think that drives most people, much less most monitoring systems, nuts of, hey, I could have this server now, but I may not have it in 20 minutes and I might have it in 2 hours from now.
Exactly.
So, okay, exactly. No, that makes sense. Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And Nick, so I noticed you covered like the business barriers and some of the technical barriers to moving to the cloud. But how about some of the political barriers, which tend to be probably greater than the other two? For example, as you introduce even a hybrid cloud scenario, there is some jobs that, you know, at a company that are not necessary, or change definition or change the makeup. And how do you see that, impacting adoption of the cloud?
I think that's a great question, and it's a really interesting area. So, you know, as I mentioned, you know, BlueStripe really exists to serve IT operations. And one of the things that we talk about a lot with our customers, particularly those that are looking to the cloud and are implementing cloud projects, is, you know, human nature is a predictable thing, in that, If I'm a member of the operations team, let's say I own a particular tier of the infrastructure that supports several applications, and I've got some of my own existing solutions, whether that's, you know, SCOM and I'm used to my views inside of Operations Manager, whether that's my specific infrastructure silo tool, whether it could be a database tool, et cetera, I'm used to looking at things and the domain that I own in a certain way. And now, if that is no longer being implemented in the same way, if it's now being implemented as part of a set of services that we as an organization can consume through the cloud, there's a lot of concern of, you know, I think you hit on one point, right, which is my job going to, you know, get moved by virtue of some of the ease of administration and deployment that you get with these new capabilities in the cloud? But again, coming back to this core topic of monitoring and management, a lot of these people are used to looking at things from a certain perspective. And if that now is going out into the cloud and they're having to look at this from a different perspective, it can be a very scary thing. Mm-hmm. And so naturally, they're going to start putting pressure back, saying, hey, look, you know, you're going to take this entire set of functionality and move it out into the cloud. We can't possibly certify that we're going to be able to maintain the service levels for these different components because you're taking it out of our control. So that's really, frankly, one of the big areas that we come in, because from our perspective, we don't care if it's on-premise, if it's hybrid cloud, if it's public cloud. Everything is going to look the same, because we kind of start from the premise of follow the application, follow the infrastructure that supports it. But I'd say the sort of human nature element is one of the big areas that starts to play out in some of these political discussions, where you may see some people starting to push back and saying, hey, we're not ready from a infrastructure hosting and operations perspective to embrace moving entire components of our core revenue generating application out to the cloud. That's where we get brought in, and we hopefully alleviate some of those concerns.
Well, I think you add in the fact, right, that now you have, you know, at least the way that I've, when I talk about other people with it, it's, you know, it used to be that if I'm a, you know, the marketing team or, you know, whatever, some line of business group, right? And I need an app to do something. I used to have to go beg and plead with the IT group and get servers and get, you know, resources. And now they shouldn't. I'm in no way, shape, or form recommending they circumvent their folks, because they're there for really good reasons and they have good knowledge. But we certainly do see some people say, you know what, I'm just not going to wait. I'm going to go over here and do this other thing.
Absolutely. Right. That's an excellent point. And so certainly, you know, you can read about it across many of the different industry publications, right? This concern of, you know, lack of control that you might introduce within an organization. You know, you have entire new products, right, that are their whole reason of being is to give an inventory of all of the different cloud services that an organization is consuming. Yeah, I think it's an excellent point. And again, this is kind of the, you know, you can either ignore it and try and resist it, or you can embrace it and then start to build your strategy as an operations team so that you are relevant to the reality of, I mean, cause look, the reality is.
Yeah, it's going there no matter what, right?
Exactly. And the question is, do you want to help be a part of shaping the strategy around how you monitor and manage the consumption and of these different services, or do you want to try and fight against it? The good news, I think, is that we're really seeing much more the former. We're seeing these IT operations organizations embracing this. Certainly, as you've seen a lot of the rise of DevOps and a lot more collaboration between development and operations, that's helping to drive some of this of we've got to build a strategy around how we're going to deploy, monitor, and manage these different workloads and services, whether they're all running in the public cloud or whether we're in a hybrid cloud scenario. Absolutely.
Okay, so you definitely talked about, you know, moving some of this stuff actually to the cloud, but I want to just step back for a second and talk about Azure Pact, which is something we spoke about with Mark and Hans a few weeks ago. And what do you see in terms of Azure Pact adoption? And, I'm assuming that BlueStripe has solutions for Azure Pact as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, and let me throw in one question. As you talk about that, right, do you hear confusion between customers between what Azure is and Azure Pact?
That's a great question. So definitely, let me start with sort of a top-level statement, which is we have been really, frankly, surprised and excited by what we've seen around Azure Pact over the last 4 or 5 months. And the 4 or 5 months is important because actually back in October at TechEd Europe, we announced alongside some of the product team from Redmond on the stage up at TechEd Europe, we announced our what's called a custom resource provider, right? The ability to bring our monitoring and management solution as a consumable service inside of Azure Pact. We announced that in Barcelona. So since then, we have been really excited by the amount of interest, and I'm going to talk about a couple of different scenarios, but let me specific address your question. Do we see confusion around Azure versus Azure Pact? For those people that really, they're brand new to it, Azure is the recognizable brand, and frankly, just because you hear the two in the same word, there may be some confusion and this sort of association of, oh yeah, you know, we're not ready to go to public cloud yet, or
right.
So there is some, but it's more on the few and far between. So the really cool thing that we've seen, we kind of look at it from two different scenarios. One is this universe of hosting providers that are out there, right? And so in particular, if you look at Northern Europe, if you look at regions where data sovereignty is a real issue, and what I mean by that is, let's take Denmark, right? Within Denmark, if you are a financial services institution or if you're a healthcare organization, there are specific laws that prohibit you from storing financially sensitive or healthcare information, financial data or healthcare information outside the borders of your country. And so public cloud isn't really an option in the sense of Azure or AWS or Rackspace, et cetera. But what you have is a group of these regional hosting providers that are providing public cloud services. And what they look at is they look at Azure Pact as this killer strategy. And I have to agree, frankly, from a Microsoft perspective, this is this killer strategy where you can leverage your footprint of Windows Server within the enterprise to provide this Azure consistent experience, but in a way that can be consumable by these different regions with their different regulations. So on the one hand, we're seeing a lot of these hosting providers, and they run the gamut, right? From larger scale that have thousands of customers that are looking at, you know, onboarding these applications and these workloads from the customer's data centers onto their platforms and using Azure Pack as this way of delivering really a framework for monitoring management of these different services. And what we do is we bring that application context. Again, we tie together your VM clouds, your SQL Server instances, your websites, et cetera, and again, give you that end-to-end view. So we're working a lot with different hosting providers, and I'd say predominantly outside of North America, because obviously within North America, the public cloud is such a strong option. The second scenario, though, is a very interesting one, which, frankly, we thought would be a lot slower to evolve, and that's hybrid cloud and private cloud within the enterprise. And what we've really seen is real large-scale enterprises, you know, again, Fortune 200-type companies are starting to kick off projects where they're looking at converting their entire private cloud infrastructure to be based on top of Azure Pack. And I think it's, you know, it's testimony to what Microsoft's been able to do to take this Azure consistent experience, right? Again, being able to very simply define a set of services that obviously doesn't hurt that it's freely available for those people that are Windows Server customers. But really, it's being able to take all the learning that you've been able to do inside of Azure and then bring that back on-premise. Well, this is going to do two things. One, obviously, it's going to help create more and more adoption of the core Windows Server platform. And as you see, a lot of the support for other operating systems and application environments can only help. But the other thing is you've now created, obviously, a nice opportunity to start to help show these enterprises how easy it will be for them to start to look at adopting public cloud services as well. So to kind of summarize, we've been pleasantly surprised, and I'll be very honest. We didn't expect to see as much interest as we have since we launched this new capability back in the end of October. And it's really across these two different customer segments, right? One is the hosting providers that are interested in providing management as a service to their tenants. The other is these enterprises that are looking at Azure Pack as this new platform on which they can base their private and hybrid cloud environments.
That's very cool. And I guess the answer to this is probably going to be yes, I hope, but this, the BlueStripe software that runs both on these, you know, Azure Pack solutions as well as in the cloud, is that like a consistent UI across all of these? Is that how it looks?
Absolutely. So one of the things that, you know, you heard me talk before, you know, kind of our big selling point to our customers is that we're going to give them a single view to the reality of what makes up these applications. You know, a part of what we do is automatically discover these different dependencies, right? So if I'm an operations person, one of the biggest challenges that we see is I don't even know what makes up this application, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've been given online claims processing and someone's telling me it's slow. What are all the systems that make it up? What are all the different transactions that are flowing across there? So just like you said, for us to be able to help address some of these concerns that we see within these enterprises, we have to provide that consistent view and consistent set of use cases and experiences around monitoring and management. So we have actually the thing that we announced back in October, we call it Performance Center. And we call it Performance Center because this is really about bringing this idea of application visibility and performance into these different environments. And it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, inside of SCOM, and we have very tight integration into the System Center portfolio. It doesn't matter if it's natively inside of the tenant portal inside of Azure Pack. It doesn't matter if it's inside of a third-party dashboarding solution. Part of what we've done is really invest in making sure that these operations teams are going to have this singular view to the reality of what these applications are, what makes them up, and know that that's going to be a reliable source of information, both in terms of just structural understanding of what makes up these environments, plus the performance of them, consumable across these different environments. So yes, absolutely. You know, the Performance Center for Azure Pack that we announced back in October is all about taking the same kinds of capabilities that our customers have been used to with our own solution and bringing that into the Azure PAC world. And one of the other actually really important points that you just reminded me of is it's not just about bringing our views. It's also about bringing context. And what I mean by that is, what if I can now say, you know, I've got 50 VMs that I'm managing inside of an Azure PAC subscription. Five of them are showing CPU alerts when I look at the VM dashboards. But which of those is actually impacting a business critical application? Mm-hmm. So what we've done is to tie in workflow as well, right? Because it's not enough just to give a view. You want to have that workflow tied in. So whether it's being able to go directly from one of our views into the VM dashboard and do remediation, right? I need to add more CPU or more RAM to a given VM or a database cluster, or tying into other custom resource providers. So there's other solutions out there, a company called GridPro, for example, that provides a web-based interface on top of Service Manager and bringing ticketing and a lot of the request management workflow. We can tie into those as well. And again, I'd say this is also testimony to the Azure PAC team themselves, because what they've built is a framework where we and other third-party solutions can tie into that framework and integrate across these different views. That's what really is getting a lot of these different hosting providers and enterprises really excited. Is it's not just manage my infrastructure, it's integrate these different workflows and roles and tying all that together in the context of the business apps that we care about.
You really covered a lot, Nick. I appreciate all your insights. You really have a good pulse on the, you know, what's happening in the Azure space. So really appreciate your sharing some of that with our listeners.
Absolutely. And again, thank you guys very much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure. And this is a really exciting space for us, and we've really seen a tremendous amount of change over just the last 6-12 months. It's exciting to be a part of it.
Okay, great. And if you want to share any links with our listeners, feel free to send them to me, and I'll put them in the show notes. Okay.
Appreciate it. We will definitely.
All right, and Evan, thanks again for all your insights as well, and we'll
always happy to be here.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.